Hello and welcome to Ukraine Calling, your weekly review of what's been happening in Ukraine with a focus on a main issue. I'm Oksana Smerichuk for Hromadske Radio in Kyiv, and here's a look at some of the stories that were in the news this week.
As of today, Ukraine's primary foreign policy goal is to deepen ties with NATO in hopes of eventually joining the military alliance. The Ukrainian parliament has formally passed a law on the matter. The vote comes a day after the Ukraine's presidential administration announced plans to appoint a Ukrainian representative to NATO. President Petro Poroshenko is also expecting a visit from representatives of the alliance, including Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg, in the beginning of July.
The Cabinet of Ministers has always, and the Prime Minister Hroysman, have always been behind this. We last week had the National Reforms Council, where the President has now taken on healthcare as well as a priority.
Ну, я думаю, що на предварительному слідстві теж буде заявлено ходатайство адвоката о прекращенні діла із-за відсутствия состава преступления, которое будет основано на нормах міжнародного права, на російському внутрішньому законодательстві, і будуть говорити о том, що статус Криму сьогодні он не окончательно оформлен даже в составе Российской Федерации.
У нас на Поліссі зберігся прадавній звичай, який називається водіння куста. Традиції цього обряду сягають ще до християнської доби.
On the 7th of June, the Ukrainian parliament adopted amendments to legislation which confirm that Ukraine's foreign policy objective is joining NATO. The amendments state that Ukraine's foreign policy will be focused on steps to promote cooperation with NATO in order to fulfill the criteria for membership. Ukraine had previously had non-aligned status. In 2010, former President Yanukovych, who was pro-Moscow, had imposed neutral, non-aligned status on Ukraine, meaning it could not join any military alliance. Now the adoption of these objectives is motivated by the response to the Russian Federation's aggression against Ukraine and annexation of part of its territory. According to polls, public support for NATO membership is at an all-time high. Before the events of February 2014 and Russian aggression on Ukrainian territory, only 15% of Ukrainians were in favor of NATO membership. But now, according to data provided by the Ilko Kucherev Democratic Initiatives Fund, as many as 44% of Ukrainians would support joining NATO. On the 8th of June, partial success was achieved in introducing legislation to reform the healthcare system. Two bills were put to the vote by the Ukrainian parliament, and the first bill, which introduced the new healthcare system, was passed. The second bill, however, which would bring amendments to the budgetary code and which would provide the financing for the healthcare changes, did not gather enough votes. Ukraine's acting Minister of Health, Ulana Suprun, said she would continue pressing to gather support for the bill before the parliament adjourns for summer break. Minister Suprun has been working on introducing legislation to reform healthcare for almost a year. The healthcare system has not seen reforms in the past 25 years, and the new system would reform palliative, emergency, and primary care simultaneously. A new National Health Service would be created, which would be an independent body under the Cabinet of Ministers. The new system would also improve the quality of care, once doctors would have to adhere to internationally based standards. Also, licensing would be for individual doctors rather than for medical practices. Harassment and pressure on Crimean Tatars continues on the Crimean Peninsula. A Crimean Tatar leader who criticized Russia's seizure of Crimea has gone on trial. Ilmi Umerov, who is the deputy chairman of the Mejlis, the Crimean Tatars' representative body, was arrested in May and has been charged with separatism. The trial procedure is likely to be lengthy. And Ilmi Umerov is requesting an open trial so that he can speak publicly about the problems faced by Crimean Tatars under Russian rule. And meanwhile, a Ukrainian journalist in Crimea jailed for expressing criticisms of Russia is also fighting politically motivated separatism charges. Mykola Semenar has been charged with calling for the violation of Russian territorial integrity, but maintains that he is innocent. His trial had resumed on the 5th of June, but then was adjourned again. His trial hearing had actually started on the 20th of March, but had been adjourned several times for different reasons. With all the international news this week, Russia's war against Ukraine didn't make many headlines. But 5 Ukrainian soldiers were killed, 27 were wounded. Civilian residential areas continued to be targets of heavy mortar attacks. On June the 3rd, a residential building in Mariinka was hit, and 2 civilians were wounded as a result. A Ukrainian NGO called Mirny Berег, which means peaceful shore, issued a report this week about war crimes, presenting data on 95 crimes collected by human rights defenders, lawyers, and civilian investigators. The Russian state news agency TASS reported that the self-proclaimed Donetsk People's Republic submitted a package of documents about war crimes committed by the Kyiv authorities to the International Criminal Court in The Hague. And Reuters reported that an Austrian accused of committing war crimes in eastern Ukraine was released from custody after credibly denying the allegations against him. Well, now is the time of year in the Northern Hemisphere that many people are travelling, making plans about flights and hotel bookings, maybe revisiting places in Ukraine even. So 3 cities definitely on top of the list for tourists to visit in Ukraine are Kyiv, Odessa and Lviv. And Lviv seems to have come out of nowhere in recent years to be a place that is a must-see. Travel articles in English language media are starting to list it as one of the top 10 unknown gems of Europe. It seems that only yesterday, Lviv was another drab post-Soviet city. Full of historical sites, yes, but neglected and grey. Full of unrealised potential. It seems to be a very large leap to today's Lviv, which is built around a charming renovated historical market square, its cobblestone streets visited by tourists year-round, with many inviting cafes, thematically restored restaurants, dozens of small hotels, all buildings in the city centre having their own stories to tell, characters in historic costumes leading guided tours, satisfied visitors leaving with bags of Lviv chocolate. To people who don't live there, it seems that this destination just happened overnight. But here with me in the studio to give us an inside view of the work that went into transforming the new tourist-friendly Lviv are an entrepreneurial couple, Roman Tatarsky and Christina Tatarsky. 5 years ago, they founded a little hotel called On the Square, located literally on Lviv's central market square. So welcome, Roman.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting us. Thanks for having us.
And hello. Hello, Christina.
Hello. It's very nice to be here. Thank you.
So as I understand it, you were both professionals, well-established in your careers, when you decided to make the switch into Lviv's hospitality industry. Christina, you were an economist with a law degree as well, working in the oil and gas sector, working in investor relations with Halnaftogaz. And Roman, you're a successful international career person, a career which involved lots of exotic travel, having an MBA background, working with business as a risk management consultant, and with companies like Ernst & Young, PricewaterhouseCoopers. So most people would have been quite happy with that and left it there. But then you made the big leap.
Mm-hmm.
You both quit your full-time jobs and invested in Lviv real estate and a little guest house. So what motivated you? How did you start? What ideas did you start with?
Well, just to give you a little bit of background and from my point of view and a little bit about my sort of personal story and what probably motivated me to go down this path is the fact that I've always loved real estate to begin with. I do hold some real estate investments in Canada, and part of the sort of plan when I moved to Ukraine to join Ernst & Young was not only professional development in the consulting sphere, I also wanted to understand the real estate market more closely in Ukraine with the idea of participating it in some way, shape or form. And that was 12 years ago. So I moved from Toronto to Kyiv 12 years ago and almost immediately started some minor investments in real estate in Ukraine. And I always particularly liked Lviv because of the architecture. It's gorgeous. Anyone that's been there, I was shocked, you know, when I first came to Lviv just by the beauty of it. And so I took an interest in the Lviv real estate market, and I started investing in the Lviv real estate market. And about the same time, the city, and this is coming to your point of how the city evolved and how it happened, I've got to give credit to the current mayor, Sadove. When he came to office, he had a very clear vision, an idea of how to develop the city. And this is very, very important because what you have now in terms of tourism and hotels and everything else that you just mentioned, it all started 10, 12 years ago when the city first started putting together their strategic plans. And it's one thing to have a strategic plan, which looks very nice on a shelf and you read it once and then you forget about it. But this one actually works, and I've seen it work day to day. It has two main components. One is tourism, one is IT. And we all know that Lviv is very strong in both segments. And so to make a long story short, eventually, I always sort of had in the back of my mind that what was missing in Lviv was a mid-range, three-star, bed and breakfast style, something a little bit unique, not a cookie-cutter hotel where every room is the same. And this is where in 2011, we started the process along with my wife. We identified a building which would be of interest on the main square of the city, as you say. We found some partners for this project, and it just so happened that we were able to open for Euro 2012.
Wow. And that was good timing.
Yes.
And what inspired you, Christina? What was your idea when you started?
Well, Roman likes to travel a lot, and when we met, we spent the first 3 years traveling around Europe mostly.
Mm-hmm.
It's very easy, very convenient, and most of the times we stayed in the small this type of hotel that we opened. It was called guest house, mini hotels. We loved the concept. They were always located in the very central part of the city. They were close to all the important sightseeing objects. Mm. They were not expensive, which was also important because we wanted to travel sometimes even like a couple of months. And it's also very important that there's always someone on the reception who can advise us where to go, where to eat, what to see. And you always get this inside look. It's not that you open a book and just start reading. It's someone who lives in the city, tells you where to go, where to hang out, and you get the best out of your experience.
So what was available in Lviv at that time when you were starting out? They had similar hotels?
I would say that, well, this is another thing that inspired me, and I saw the opportunity. Well, not even the opportunity, the need, because I would come to Lviv myself in the early days, wanting a place to stay. And really, the only options you had were either hostels or, the higher-end hotels like Leopolis and Grand Hotel, etc. You didn't have that sort of unique mid-range, good value for money, but also comfort and a unique place to stay where, you know, you would feel comfortable. And that wasn't around at the time. And I think that's the other thing that really inspired me to actually go ahead with opening a bed and breakfast. Because it's one thing to buy up a building or consolidate a building or buy a few apartments in a building. And the next decision or step is what to do with it. Because really, our family business, I guess, is two-prong. I would say one side of it is a real estate business where we actually buy and redevelop real estate. And the other is the hotel operational business. And so at some point you decide what to do with the real estate you bought. And this made perfect sense at the time.
Can you, just to help us visualize what this guest house that you first started with looked like, can you describe it a little bit? And how many rooms were there?
Well, I'll start with what it looked like and then you can... So our approach was literally to buy... Well, we identified a building which we were able to buy and consolidate, theoretically, at that point. So what we ended up doing was really just buying residential flats. The concept was to buy out the entire floor or some sort of piece of a building which would make sense to run as a consolidated bed and breakfast. And they were in very rough shape. I mean, if you've seen some of the older Lviv Quartiere apartments, these were typically, you know, smaller apartments, neglected, older people, nothing's been done, you know, for many years. And which is not bad, because our whole concept and idea is when we purchase them, we do a full renovation anyway. So this actually works. But they were very scary when we first walked in. And maybe, Christina, you'd like to...
So we try to keep some of the original elements, like wooden stairs and wooden floors, and we managed to save some of the paintings on the walls.
The frescoes.
Yeah. And together with that, we renovated almost the major part of the remaining premises. So when you walk into our rooms, you have this fresh feeling of... newly renovated rooms, but you also have these very particular and very interesting details that you would see only in a 16th century building, like our building is.
The old fireplaces, the old doors, they've all been fully restored. You know, so people get a sense, people don't come to Lviv, well, some do, but many people come to Lviv to actually experience Lviv and see what
a historic
Austrian building looks like. And that's what we tried to preserve while... providing full comfort of new plumbing and everything. So, I mean, everything works like it should, but...
How many rooms did you start with initially?
We started with 6 rooms. Yeah. We currently have in our first hotel 11 rooms. And 2 years ago, we started a new hotel because the business was going well. So very close to the central market, we started a new one, which is going to be even bigger, but the same concept.
So within, it's called Danilo Inn, and within a couple of weeks, there will be 21 rooms there operating. So
it's progressing.
Yeah.
But when you started, did you start before the 2012, the Euro Cup football competition?
Yeah, I honestly would say it was a pure coincidence. I always had this... idea, as I mentioned, and it took about a year to purchase the initial real estate, which we then turned into 6 rooms. And it, you know, I mean, it was a very nice coincidence and stimulation, the fact that Euro 2012 was going to be held in Lviv. And actually, I should mention that today is actually the 5-year birthday of the first hotel on the Square Guest House.
Well, congratulations.
We opened, August 8th.
There's going to be a big celebration, I hope.
Yeah. June 8th, I should say. Sorry. We opened June 8th, 2012, the first match of the Euro 2012 championship.
So did you, like, were you ready for the guests?
We are not
relatively
ready. I don't think there's always something missing. There's always something more you want to do. But when the client steps into your hotel, your new hotel, and ask whether I can stay, of course you can stay. So we got our first 2 customers. They were from UK. We were very excited, very happy. And of course we welcomed them and we tried to provide all necessary, everything necessary. And they seemed to be very happy with what they...
Well, when you first opened, it was a bit bare, you know? I mean, the art on the walls was missing and perhaps we didn't have all of the little bits and pieces that we do now in the hotel.
But you had this big influx, I guess, interested guests because of the...
And the location was perfect, I should say. Mm-hmm. And they could see the Lviv City Council from their windows, which is a unique experience, I guess. Not every day you have such a magnificent view from your window. Mm-hmm. So they were extremely happy.
Do you keep statistics and some kind of market analysis? What kind of guests were coming in the beginning when you first opened?
I may comment. Before 2013, before the revolution, 60% of our clients, I would say, they were Ukrainians and probably 15% Russians. The rest were Central Europe, North American. After the revolution, the structure of the clients changed a little bit in the direction that we started to have more and more Ukrainian coming to Lviv and, of course, to our hotel, much less the Russians. We also have a lot of guests from Poland, of course, Germany. Belarus is a very... active in, I don't know, visiting Lviv. And of course, Turks, because around 3 years ago, I guess, Lviv Airport launched direct flights to Istanbul. So for some reason, we have a lot of guests from Turkey as well.
But the group is actually very diverse. I just wanted to add, because I just recalled that one of our first guests was from Mexico. You know, there's been groups from Hong Kong and Taiwan.
And Brazil and Japan.
So it's quite...
It's quite international.
Which actually also makes it quite interesting and a joy to run the business, because it's great to have interaction with all our guests. Yeah.
And we wanted to know why they came to Lviv, yeah. What they wanted to see. So we always try to somehow have this feeling, and we would go out with our guests sometimes and just have a little conversation to find out more. What were they looking for? How did they find out about Lviv? How, of course, they find out about our hotel.
Mm-hmm. Our Mexican friend is still 5 years later inviting us to come visit him in Mexico.
That sounds like it. He had a good time.
I hope we can make it happen soon.
And also a part of this is you can't, of course, run a successful guest house all alone. You need to rely on much support and infrastructure within the city. Do you find the city is reaching out to small businesses in the tourism industry and hospitality and to unify things?
I find that the city has been very helpful in terms of providing a lot of basic things and infrastructure that you need in a newly developing tourist-focused market, starting with the strategy that I mentioned earlier. So this is a documented formal strategy. There's a group of business people who meet regularly to discuss the implementation of the strategy, to work on different elements of the tourism strategy. Even minor things like a tourist info office. 10 years ago, there was no information office for the tourist. And I once even relayed this to the mayor personally. I said, okay, I can imagine what it's like to be a foreigner because imagine if I forget Ukrainian and I just get off the train in Lviv, everything absolutely is in Ukrainian. I would have no clue what to do as a pure foreigner coming in. And I mean, this is a major entry point into the city is the train station. It's an obvious one. But in short order, a tourist office was, and I'm sure I'm not the only person that was making these observations, but things like that. There's now a multilingual tourist office on the main square. We overlook it.
As well on the train station and airport.
At the train station. It's very helpful. I mean, it's the kind of stuff that you really need, basic tourist infrastructure.
To fill in all the other.
Yeah, yeah.
So when you started, did you have to... you hired staff. You weren't, I guess, not the only people working there. Did you have to retrain people completely? What was your approach to... because service, after all, is very important, right? Mm-hmm.
So we wanted to be a little bit unique in what kind of service are we providing for our clients. And the first thing was, of course, speaking the client's language. So what we did, it was more or less naturally. We tried to employ young students who speak English very well, first of all, who has been maybe traveling a little bit, so have this sense of staying in small hotels. Mm-hmm. And I think the strategy was pretty successful, because all the staff that we were employing, they were very easy to coach, to train a little bit. And they were open to the world, open to the clients from all over the world. We could see very quickly that the training has been very successful, and we were receiving very good reviews on the client service, and especially on the staff, which was actually welcoming the client.
I would just add as context, I think it's all a very important, it's possible to learn technically almost any job, but what's very important, and this is really what was most important to us when we were hiring our staff and continue to hire our staff, is that they have the right attitude, that they're positive people, that they really do believe in this concept of customer service and guest satisfaction. All the other stuff, a relatively smart person can probably learn. And I think that was, and it remains, one of our competitive sort of advantages, is that we don't take staff, standard hotel staff. We really, our number one priority is interaction, positive interaction with the guests.
Mm-hmm. So, but you're living at the moment in Kyiv,
yeah.
But you're still managing somehow your very actively involved in this guest house. How do you do that? I mean, how do you know that there's like quality service and that the hotel is or the guest house is working?
I can say from my point of view, I mean, I always had a vision in my head. I knew that we were not going to be in Lviv full time. Right. So I always had this understanding and vision that we need to build a team and hire the people that will be able to work. We will be able to work with remotely, that we can trust, that, you know, that we see eye to eye with. And that's what we've managed to do is hire a team that, you know, and it's amazing this day and age with the internet and emails and phones and video and stuff. There's really a lot you can do remotely if you have the right staff in place, if you have people you can trust and that you enjoy working with and they enjoy their work and jobs. And I think that's...
During these 5 years, we have been implementing very good booking systems that is unique and is actually is compounding all different booking systems into one. This has been also very good for us and good for the business.
So do you find that, now that tourism has expanded and perhaps is the Ukrainian clients that come to visit you, the guests are also perhaps expecting more and getting used to these services that are available. Do you find that Ukrainian clients have changed as well?
Yes, I can see that. I remember the first reviews of Ukrainian clients. It was interesting to read them. And the concept of the guest house was pretty new to them. And there were different reviews, whether they like it or not. Now, most of the clients, after visiting maybe the same concept in Europe or North America, they're happy to see these small hotels appearing in Lviv, and they're pretty happy. They also are, the client is growing, and they're expecting a much higher level of service. They notice the small details that we have been working a lot through these 5 years. We were very happy to see that you have this sort of service, or we were very happy to see that you put the earplugs next to our bed. Because like we know that we are located in the central part of the city, and of course it's a lot of
action
going on. So we think we spend a lot of time at our hotel, and of course we even stayed through the night so we could experience fully how it's to be a client in our hotel. So these small details, we always think about them. Every time when we travel and we stay at a hotel, we always come back with some ideas. And the best of them, we try to implement and make the same in our hotel.
I think the client base has matured. This is coming back to, there's various funny sort of situations. Because, for example, we have some exposed brick in some of our rooms, which is nowadays, a very nice thing to have. And, one in 300 clients, you'll get the comment, how could you leave brick exposed and not plaster it? It's just not, you don't do that. And, but...
Or old wooden stairs, which we love really much. And the professional photographers who come visit and stay at our hotel, they're amazed by the beauty of these stairs. But, of course, some of the people would comment that maybe they're not very comfortable. But, again, it's a 16th century building, and we have a very short history hanging on the walls at our reception. So everyone could understand.
They're maturing. They're getting it now. They're getting the concept, the product. Which is, it's nice. It's nice to see.
So how's the occupancy rate looking this summer?
I was going to say that, there's a lot of things that are reflected in the occupancy rate, but we've always had very good occupancy. Historically, honestly, it's between 85 and 99%, depending on the season and the day of the week, etc. And, we'll be adding more rooms. As I said, within a few weeks, we'll be having a total of 32 rooms across the two properties. I hope that occupancy doesn't change too much. But I guess it's a vote of confidence in the product that clients get it and they appreciate it, they like it. And we have a lot of repeat business now.
And because it's Lviv on the list of top three cities to visit in Ukraine, I think there's not such a thing as a very low season in Lviv. And this is unique.
It's literally 1 month per year, February. Is low because it's cold and nothing's going on.
If you want to bargain.
Exactly.
<That's>
And maybe this is one of the reasons why we do the business mostly in Lviv, because some of our friends ask, why won't you open the same place in Kyiv? We say that Lviv is very unique.
It is. Yeah.
So when it comes to occupants and the number of tourists visiting, which is constantly growing. I just saw the last number of people coming in 2016 to Lviv was 2.5 million, which is twice as much as, for example, in 2012. So it's a huge increase.
Despite all the fluctuations.
Sure.
A very positive.
At one point, the uncertain situation. But, well, I wish you that it just keeps growing.
Thank you.
Because it's good to see that a very welcoming, tourist-friendly city. So thank you. Thank you for coming in. And, okay, I have told you Roman and Christina's story, and there's also dozens of small friendly hotels in Lviv. So if you're still wondering what to do with your summer vacation, I think you can't go wrong if you explore Lviv and come and explore Ukraine. So have a good summer.
Please do come to Lviv. You're welcome in Lviv anytime. Thank you, Oksana, for having me.
Thank you, Oksana.
Thank you. And on the cultural scene, this past week, Ukrainians celebrated Pentecost. The holiday is known as Zeleni Svyata, or Green Holidays. The custom is to gather some green herbs or green branches and bring them indoors to decorate rooms. Usually the interiors of churches are all decorated in greenery. In parts of western Ukraine, people take it even further. They will even decorate their local public transport, such as trams and trolley buses, with green branches. In any case, everybody gets to enjoy the long weekend break. Pentecost, or Zeleni Svyata, has been a public holiday in Ukraine again since 1991. And now for our music selection. There used to be a musical project in Ivano-Frankivsk called Buhnai, with musicians Andrei Fedotov and Edward Skripnik. Fedotov passed away. However, Skripnik now works on Hromadske Radio. Here's a piece they once recorded together in a home studio called Fedot. Enjoy!
Дратує і марніє і нас. поділюсь тобою, як і ти, мені не жалко.
Looking forward, next week, we'll once again be looking at Ukraine and international issues. Tune in for a new episode, and we'd love to hear from you. Write to us at ukrainecalling@hromadskeradio.org. I'm Oksana Smerechuk for Hromadske Radio in Kyiv. Thanks for listening.